With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast, and today we're going to focus on the first defeats of the Italian army in North Africa inflicted upon Mussolini's armies by the British in 1940. This, of course, is a tale of arrogance and hubris that befits the Duce and the lack of foresight and the poor preparation for war, and the fact that throughout the 1930s, various forays into Abyssinia and Spain had depleted the financial reserves and the material preparation that the Italian army and navy needed, meant that the Italian forces in North Africa would suffer catastrophic defeats to a far, far smaller British Empire force. Now, a month or two ago, I did a podcast on the preparations by Mussolini and the preparations by the British for conflict in North Africa and Britain's plans to defend the Suez Canal. If you want to stop and go listen to that, that'll make a whole lot more sense about this podcast. But if not, then listen on, and I'm sure you can catch that one later on. In Libya to the west and in Abyssinia to the south, the Italians possessed vast numbers of troops. There were 600,000 Italian and colonial troops in both Italian possessions, and these were poised to expel the British from Egypt with the greatest of ease. Churchill's least favourite general, Archibald Wavell, was sent to conduct the defence of Egypt, and under his command in Egypt and in East Africa in general, there were less than 100,000 British and colonial troops. And all this also included troops in the Middle East, Sudan and Somaliland and Kenya. So the Middle Eastern sector was very, very lightly garrisoned compared to the threats that faced it. And this was demonstrated when British Somaliland fell without almost a shot being fired to their Italian neighbours in Italian Somaliland. And this was the kind of conquest that Mussolini was looking for. Quick, easy, without expending large amounts of blood and treasure, and conserving the munitions and equipment that were Mussolini had access to. The hope that Mussolini had was that Britain would capitulate soon anyway, that the bombing of Britain and perhaps even an invasion of Britain might take place, and very swiftly a peace conference would be called in which Mussolini would appear on the victorious side and would take a disproportionate share of imperial assets from Britain compared to the amount of effort and fighting the Italians had actually put in. Max Hastings in All Hell Let Loose reports that one Italian journalist wrote, "We want to reach the Suez with our own forces alone. Perhaps we will win the war, not the Germans." And it's easy to write these things off as deluded, which certainly they are, but it also tells us an awful lot about the perspectives of people at the time. The British were by no means convinced that they would hold Egypt. They were no means convinced that they would hold the Suez Canal. British armies would fight to the death to maintain it, to maintain access to Suez, and Churchill would have ordered innumerable divisions into battle, every man he could have laid his hands on to make sure that Suez didn't fall. But in 1940, there was no belief that necessarily the centre would hold. And it was also highly plausible that the Italians might seize Egypt from an Italian perspective. This seemed like an easy victory in the offing. Mussolini had already sabotaged his military capability. He had allowed part of his army to be demobilised in order to return home to bring in the Italian wheat harvest. The obsession that Mussolini had with grain and grain quotas and expanding the amount of arable land also tied in with the fact that many of his soldiers were sons of peasants, and the modernisation of Italy had not really reached large parts of the rural south. This meant that the needs of bringing in the harvest and the cycles of rural life still had a huge significance when it came to removing large numbers of troops from the countryside. Not only had Mussolini failed to seize Malta, which was in the hands of Great Britain and would be a resupply base for British ships crossing the Mediterranean to connect Egypt up with Great Britain, but Malta would also be a key airfield for British bombers and anti-submarine aircraft and everything else in the skies that Axis forces really didn't want to see. He planned operations in both Greece and Yugoslavia, and instead of concentrating his energies on one task, Mussolini, in his particularly erratic and characteristically impulsive manner, made sure that his attempts to seize territory spanned both Europe and North Africa. This was a crucial mistake. Force concentration is vital when taking on a technologically advanced enemy such as Great Britain that was entrenched and had the opportunity and had the advantage of being the defender. Max Hastings again writes, "An Italian diplomat vented his disgust on the mood he encountered during a visit to Milan. Everyone thinks only of eating, enjoying themselves, making money, and relaying witticisms about the great and powerful. Anyone who gets killed is a jerk. He who supplies the troops with cardboard shoes is considered a sort of hero." A young Italian officer wrote home from Libya, "We're trying to fight this war as though it were a colonial war in Africa, but this is a European war, fought with European weapons against a European enemy. We take too little account of this in building our stone forts and equipping ourselves with such luxury." In many ways, the campaign in Africa was fascism's ideological chickens coming home to roost. The chaos and the corruption of Mussolini's regime had meant that the profiteering that went on in Italy, that involved the supplying of inadequate equipment to Italian soldiers in North Africa and the embezzlement of large sums of public money, along with the boasts and the wild, overly optimistic projections of Mussolini, who believed, as Hitler did, but with even less rigour, that simply the will to fight and obey would be enough to see men over the top and interaction against the British, and that concepts such as planning, logistics, supply chains, and the adequate equipment of an army moving across a desert really were irrelevant, that this would be a defining moment in Italian national history, and that martial vigour would shape Italians. War, struggle and bloodshed would really forge the nation into a mighty warrior people. All this is, of course, complete fantasy, and the wars are not won on willpower alone, or really willpower at all. Wars are really won on logistics, production, supply chains, and the ability to get fuel, food, equipment and munitions to men when they need it. Hitler, as a gesture of solidarity with his Axis ally, offered Mussolini two armoured divisions to help him in North Africa, which would perhaps have pushed all the way through to the Suez Canal. One of Mussolini's main problems was lack of armour and transport. Mussolini dismissed this, and he didn't want the Germans from taking any part of his, what he perceived as being his victory. However, in a moment of particularly poor judgment by Mussolini, one quarter of the entire Italian Air Force had been sent to join the Luftwaffe in its attack on Great Britain. And one of the deciding factors in the brief desert war that Mussolini attempts to fight against Britain was lack of air support. The Italian army is virtually defenceless from the skies. Mussolini kept forces in the rear in Albania to attack Greece or Yugoslavia. And these are, of course, troops who would have been highly useful fighting in the desert. Mussolini was afraid that a deal between Britain and Germany would be made before he could make serious inroads into the British Empire in North Africa. And the race to take territory from Britain led him into his greatest military fiasco of the war, in which 26 divisions, half the Italian Air Force, the entire force of Italian tanks, and any illusion that Mussolini was a serious player in the war were lost. Mussolini's most senior military commander in North Africa was Marshal Rodolfo Graziani, who in the summer of 1940 commanded 500,000 men in Libya, facing 36,000 British troops in Egypt, and backed by a further 27,000 men in Palestine. Graziani himself had committed what we would now term crimes against humanity in 1935, dropping poison gas on the Abyssinian people. And he was far more suited to easy wars of conquest against far weaker enemies than he was to a fight against a well-equipped and motivated force, even one which was dwarfed by his own retinue of troops. Marshal Graziani was cautious when it came to advancing. The British had already led cross-border raids against the Italians for information and prisoners, and he was not sure whether he really felt like taking on the British at all. At the insistence of Mussolini, Graziani leads an attack, and he is certain that the British have more men. Quite unnecessarily, he digs in at Sidi Barrani, which sits on the coastal road from Libya into Egypt, about 95 kilometres across the border.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Order, and it was an incredibly cautious move. It was one which was going to be ultimately unsuccessful, and it showed that Graziani had very little understanding of warfare, of how armies moved, and how easy it was along this tiny strip of navigable land on the northern coastline of North Africa to be outmaneuvered and encircled. Graziani stopped at Sidi Barani for 3 months. Mussolini, furious, demanded that there be action, demanded there be movement, desperate that something happen, some defeat of the British occur before the war came to an end. Churchill was also demanding some kind of victory following Dunkirk and following the removal of the British Expeditionary Force from Europe. He was certain that North Africa had to be the place that the battle was taken to the Axis, and it had to be the place that the British were given their first great victory, and this would bring up morale and keep Britain in the war. More importantly than this, Churchill also had to present a success to Roosevelt. Roosevelt, who Churchill was so keen to eventually bring into the war and to keep a supply of credit and of munitions crossing the Atlantic to Britain. And it was important that the American public saw that the British were able to fight back and were not a lost cause. In January 1941, the British army in Sudan marched into Italian-occupied Eritrea and part of Abyssinia and seized a fortress at Keren in a battle which began on the 27th of March, which was a very costly battle to the British, killing 500 soldiers and leaving over 3,200 wounded. In February that year as well, February 1941, the British Army advanced from Egypt under one of the most successful generals of the war, who was later, unfortunately for him, captured, General Alan Cunningham, who marched from Kenya into Abyssinia and seized the capital, Addis Ababa, ending the occupation of Italy in Abyssinia, which had begun in 1935. So the first quick victory of the war didn't go to Mussolini. It went to Great Britain, or the first quick victory of the war, shall we say, in North Africa and the Middle East. One thing that's always worth noting with these kinds of campaigns, that while combat deaths were very low, the British saw some 75,000 men succumb to sickness, and of which 744 died. Even cases of diarrhoea and gastric illness and that sort of thing that aren't life-threatening can leave valuable fighting men out of action for considerable periods of time, so much so that they have to be counted as non-combatants. The Italians lost 300,000 troops taken prisoner. While the Italian Empire in Abyssinia was busy being destroyed, the most significant move came against Graziani when Wavell and Lieutenant General Sir Richard O'Connor launched Operation Compass against Sidi Barani. When it became clear that Italian defences were extremely weak, Italian troops were almost in some cases unarmed, they hadn't eaten, were thirsty, demoralised, hungry and ready to surrender in large numbers. The scope of the operation dramatically increased. The British Imperial forces advance into Libya, taking huge numbers of prisoners, moving very, very quickly. And it's this speed which is the key to their success. They were motorised. The British Army moved their troops around in lorries, with jeeps, and were supported by light tanks. And this also meant that they could move large quantities of water around too. These were some of the things that Mussolini had neglected to provide his troops with in sufficient quantities. However extraordinary these victories seemed, skilled military onlookers in the Soviet Union, in America, and in the Axis powers saw them for what they were, relatively insignificant. And they were insignificant particularly because at this point they didn't feature the Germans, and that any fight between Britain and Italy was inevitably going to be a sideshow, and any struggle between Britain and Germany before Barbarossa was going to be decisive in the outcome of the war. This was not how people in Britain saw it. There was a great deal of excitement and rejoicing at victories over Italy in North Africa, and it did do a significant amount to augment British national pride. There was a great deal of interest in the war in North Africa, and by early February, O'Connor's army had moved 500 miles from its start point, and following the fall of El Aquila, the road to Tripoli was open and British troops looked poised to conquer all of Libya. In a later podcast, I'm going to talk about the disaster for the British Army in Greece and Crete. And it was a particular tragedy because as O'Connor's army raced across Libya to seize Tripoli, it ground to a halt as Churchill ordered four divisions, including the New Zealand division and much of the Australians, to Greece in order to defend the country which was seemingly indefensible. This wouldn't be the first or the last time in the war that Churchill's personal intervention led to unnecessary and catastrophic setbacks. The timing was particularly unfortunate as the German Africa Corps had been dispatched to aid Mussolini and to prevent the collapse of Mussolini in North Africa, led by the maverick German general Erwin Rommel, about whom we'll hear more later on. The British supply line was also enormously overstretched, as we'll see with North Africa, and there's a great deal to be said on the subject. And this will take another few podcasts to finally work our way completely through. There would be an elastic campaign of stretching supply lines on both sides. And when the British left Egypt and made their way through Libya, their supply line extended to breaking point. So, and the moment that success was closest, as they closed on Tripoli, the army started to grind to a halt. It began to lose manpower to the defence of Greece, and it also began to find it harder and harder to resupply itself. And a powerful new enemy was being unloaded at the docks of Tripoli itself. The Abyssinia campaign, whilst it had been swift and successful, it had seized a large amount of territory which had to be garrisoned by British and Commonwealth troops, which was of questionable value. It had been of questionable value to Mussolini. And the British had become used to fighting Italians who were poorly led, poorly trained and poorly motivated. And they were in for something of a shock when the Africa Corps entered the battlefield particularly with 88mm artillery, which could destroy British tanks from a safe distance. One success that Operation Compass had was quite unintended. It kept Spain out of the war. Franco, in 1940, had been weighing up the possibility of throwing his lot in with Hitler. Hitler had a meeting in the Pyrenees upon his aboard his train with Franco, in which Franco essentially asks for vast amounts of North African territory to be transferred from Vichy France to him in return for his participation in the war, some fairly minor stuff such as seizing Gibraltar. And Hitler couldn't do this, knowing that he had to placate his new Vichy France ally, and that Franco was asking for an awful lot in return for not very much. Franco wanted to make sure that the British had been already defeated by Germany and possibly Italy before he risked anything. And the fact that O'Connor had led such a spectacular defeat of Italy in Sidi Barrani and into Libya made Franco very, very cautious indeed. Mussolini had his eye on the same French colonies in Africa and was keen for Franco not to be involved. And when plans to seize Gibraltar using a Spanish and German combined force were shelved, it was because in February 1941 Hitler was beginning to see the entire Mediterranean theatre as an irritant and a sideshow, and of course was starting to turn his attentions to Russia. A Spanish intervention in the Second World War would have doomed Gibraltar. It would probably also have doomed Malta as well, and would have lost the British any chance of controlling the Mediterranean. This would mean that the resupply of British Egypt would have become virtually impossible, and the chances of the entire Middle Eastern sector falling would have been greatly increased. So Operation Compass, whilst it was dismissed by some onlookers as being looking very grand but having little substance, actually potentially saved the British in the Middle East and perhaps even Britain's war effort in its entirety. Because without the Middle East, of course, there would have been very little oil in order to fuel Britain's war effort that didn't ship itself across the Atlantic from the United States. Thanks for listening, and I'm going to continue looking over the next few weeks at the Desert War. So if you like that, if you find it interesting, of course, give us some good feedback, say hi on the Facebook page, pass it on to a friend, or even better, give us a thumbs up on the iTunes Explaining History page. Many thanks, and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.